It's that most wonderful time of the year. It really is this time. And the most wonderful time of the day when we get to talk to Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, the food maverick, the food, the food guy. And what? Oh, the food mensch. That's the last one. Did you do anything menschy?
Oh, I went to a fabulous restaurant for Thanksgiving. First time I ever had a good restaurant experience on Thanksgiving. I stay away from restaurants on big holidays like that. But whatever reason, we went to the River Cafe here in Brooklyn, and it's an amazing place. I mean, besides that, it's gorgeous. You know, it's on a barge,
right,
on the East River, and with a view of Manhattan. Even though it was a very overcast day, couldn't see the tops of the buildings. I know what they look like. It's okay. You know what was interesting is that River Cafe usually has more than its. Well, I shouldn't say that. It has a good share of tourists, because you know it's gorgeous and it has a view. Plus, the food's really good. And the service is beyond good. But Thanksgiving, it seemed like a local crowd to me. It didn't seem like a tourist crowd at all. Anyway, I did that, and then I'm into going back to restaurants a little bit. We went to a place here in Park Slope. Well, technically, it's Prospect Heights, because it's on the other side of Flatbush Avenue. But it's called Sofret. Or Sofre, S-O-F-R-E-H. And as far as I know, it's the only Persian restaurant in Brooklyn. There may be something in Manhattan and probably in Queens. But it's a very upscale, we'll say, a Persian restaurant. The owner is a chef, and she's also in the dining room. And she actually does the cooking during the day and then washes up, changes her clothing, and goes into the dining room. So that was a really great experience right here in my neighborhood. And I don't know, the other day, a few days ago, Bob asked me, how is that, whatever it was. And I said, you know, I just blurted this out, you know, it would be better with cheesecake. I don't know what got into me. I haven't had obeyed a cheesecake in years. No, I shouldn't say that. I have eaten cheesecake. But I haven't made a cheesecake in years. So I go to my files this morning, and I discover I am cheesecake crazy from my life. In fact, my very first cookbook, Cooking in a Small Kitchen, has a cheesecake in it that for the moment then, back in 1978, seemed revolutionary, but probably isn't anymore. It was a New York-style cream cheesecake, but made with whipped cream cheese instead of regular cream cheese, and as a result, was lighter. Not that you want your cheesecake to be light. As my mother used to say, cheesecake is not dessert, it's a meal. You really should devote yourself to a piece of cheesecake, which is very rich and filling and fattening. Anyway, my very first book, which, by the way, was republished 40 years after the original publication, and was brought out in a small reproduction hardcover edition by Macmillan. And I saw this morning it's on Amazon, Cooking in a Small Kitchen. By the way, my kitchen, the kitchen that's shown on the cover here is not my kitchen at all, not even of the time, but on the back cover, it's a youthful picture of Arthur Schwartz in what was at that time my actual small kitchen. I'm shown chopping some vegetables on a butcher block, which was in fact the top of my dishwasher. I had a dishwasher on wheels, and you had to roll it over to the sink and hook it up when you wanted to use it. But in the meantime, you could use it as a countertop. But it was a small kitchen. Anyway, back to cheesecake. So for years, my family was making this cheesecake with the whipped cream cheese. And I have to say that when at my cousin's house, it always came out okay. At my sister's house, it didn't always come out okay. My sister was following, I'm sure she was following the recipe exactly, and she just didn't really test to see if the cake was done. And hers always came out jiggly in the middle, a little undercooked. But it's a very easy cake. For one thing, this is cooking in a small kitchen. All you do is dump everything in a bowl and beat it together. And what you dump in the bowl is 4 8-ounce tubs of whipped cream cheese. Gotta say, my nephew reminded me the other day that my mother did not use Philadelphia whipped cream cheese. She always used Tempty whipped cream cheese. Anyway, whatever it is, you need 4 8-ounce tubs of it. Plus a pint. This makes a very large cake, let me just say. It'll serve at least 12 people. Or I should say, it should make at least 12 portions. A pint of sour cream. And you just dump these things in a bowl in this order. A quarter of a pound, which is a stick of butter, which I think should be at room temperature, meaning soft. 1.5 cups of granulated sugar. I'm going slowly, and I'll repeat everything, because if you're jotting this down, I mean, unless you want to buy the book for $10, it's not available
digitally.
By the way,
I'm looking at all the places where you can do it. But
this recipe is not even in my computer files, because this book predates my having a computer. 2 tablespoons of cornstarch, 1 teaspoon of vanilla, and 1 teaspoon of lemon juice. You put that all in a bowl, beat it until it's relatively smooth. There'll probably be some little bits of lumpiness. And then you beat in, one at a time, 5 eggs. Now this gets poured into a 10-inch springform pan. Now, I've learned my lesson with springform pans. And as a rule, I now wrap my springform pan in aluminum foil, because if it's going into, you don't want it to leak into the oven. I mean, you don't want a leaky springform pan, but I've had them in my life. So anyway, pour the batter into a 10-inch springform pan. Now, wrap it in foil and put that in a larger pan, like a roasting pan. And when you get it in the oven, for me, is the easiest time to pour in boiling water around your springform pan in the larger pan. Bring some water to a boil, and you know, once you get it on the shelf, you just pour in the water. If you pour in the water before you put it in the oven, it's a struggle, I think, to get it in the oven without spilling something. Anyway, it goes into a 375-degree oven for an hour. Now, you really need to check it. As I said, my cousin Cindy's always came out perfect. My sister's didn't always. It's going to be your oven, and your judgment, and how cold the thing was when you put it in the oven. So check it after an hour, and you may want to add another 5 minutes or so. And then it should be firm all around the edge and only jiggly in the very middle. And you can just sort of shake the pan and see if it's still a little bit jiggly in the middle. And then you let it cool in the water bath. And then once it's gotten down to room temperature, take it out. And then finish cooling it until you want to put it in the refrigerator. And got to say, you really have to refrigerate this for several hours. And in fact, I think it's even better the second day. If you want to change the flavoring, you can. I, these days, don't use much lemon zest. You got to go out of your way to buy an organic lemon. In the end, I don't think it adds that much to the product, but I might increase the vanilla in that. So looking through my files this morning, finding all these cheesecake recipes, I realize I really do love cheesecake, and New York loves cheesecake. That, by the way, that is I would call that a New York-style creamy cheesecake made with cream cheese. Now, cream cheese itself is a New York product. Chester, New York. Do you know where that is, Jill?
No.
Chester is in Orange County, sort of just over the border, not all that far from Sharon, really. But Chester, in the 19th century, was, it's nothing place now, by the way, but in the 19th century, it was a major dairying center. A lot of cows in Chester, in Orange County, New York, which is, by the way, very south. I mean, really an hour and a half at the most from the city.
It's just an hour and a half from Sharon, too.
There you go. So, yeah, but who knew? Well, I did. In 1872, a dairyman in Chester, trying to imitate a French cheese called Neuchâtel, came up with a formula that ended up to be Philadelphia cream cheese, in short. So in the late 19th century, it became called Philadelphia cream cheese. Why? Because Philadelphia was, in fact, a culinary center at the time. And I have a book. It's an interesting book. I wonder where it is. I know where it is. I'm forgetting his name now. But this man, at the end of the 19th century, chronicled all the foods that he found in the New York markets. And one of them is Philadelphia cheese. It really is not cream cheese at all. It is what my Italian friends would call primo sale. It's just curd, drained curd, and put on a flat surface, salted, and turned, after it starts drying a little bit, it's turned a couple times. So it gets a sort of soft rind and a creamy center. Philadelphia cream cheese is absolutely nothing like that. But it did strike a chord with a lot of Eastern Europeans who were accustomed to eating a lot of dairy, you know, in those little farms, shtetl of Eastern Europe. Everybody had a cow. That was one of the subsistence things. And you made cheesecake kind of, I mean, you had a lot of dairy. You had a lot of,
right,
a lot of fresh milk.
But when Philly cream cheese, Philadelphia cream cheese first started getting, you know, quote, marketed.
Yeah.
Was there ever a point where it tasted like what you're describing, or was
no,
it always?
No.
Okay.
I mean, Neuchâtel, no. I mean, not that I know of. But Primo Sale, the Philadelphia cheese described in this markets book, could have tasted somewhat like Neuchâtel, because Neuchâtel is a soft rind cheese, like Camembert and Brie. It's in that family of cheeses. But you wouldn't be, I mean, I guess you could make, I've seen savory cheesecake recipes. I've never cared for them especially. Although there used to be years ago, I don't know, somebody I know used to make one with blue cheese that I liked. Anyway, cheesecake became a really popular thing in New York not until the 1920s. There were two places then that were famous for their cheesecake. I mean, really internationally famous. And that was Lindy's. Do you remember? Lindy's actually had two lives. The original life with Leo Linderman, a delicatessen / restaurant in Midtown. And then when the Reese Corporation owned a lot of, I don't even know what's become of them, but they probably still own a lot of different names. They bought the name and opened up a second group of Lindy's, which had nothing to do with the first. Lindy's cheesecake was so famous that Damon Runyon used it in his stories. And if you remember, ever see the movie Guys and Dolls? I hope so. It's a wonderful movie, even though at the time it came out.
Movie and show.
Pardon me?
Movie and show.
Yeah, well, we only have the movie to watch right now.
Well, I'm just saying.
I wish somebody would revive Guys and Dolls, one of my favorite musicals. But there's in the beginning of the movie, Nathan Detroit, well, the movie, in the beginning of the show, Nathan Detroit, who is this gambler who sets up gambling venues, bets Sky Masterson, who's a high-rolling gambler, because he's trying to trick him into doing something. He has him guess, what does, in the stories, it's not Lindy's, but Mindy's, what sells more, Mindy's cheesecake or Mindy's strudel? And that was, you know, Damon Runyon's nod to Lindy's cheesecake, which I think might still be made somewhere. I have the recipe, though. I'll give you the recipe if you want. And the other restaurant was Reuben's. Now, the second Mr. Reuben, Arnold, I think his first name was the son of, and he lied a lot. He made up stories. For instance, the Reuben sandwich does not come from Reuben's Deli. And I have old menus from Reuben's Deli to prove that there was never a sandwich like that. There was a special sandwich, but it wasn't what we call a Reuben. But Reuben's had cheesecake that was famous. And nowadays, I guess the most famous cheesecake is from Junior's.
Right.
And Junior's cheesecake is now sold frozen all over the place. I mean, I go into I was just in an offbeat supermarket the other day. I only went in because it was offbeat, and it was in a neighborhood I don't usually do my grocery shopping in. And they had, as soon as I walked in, they had a whole case full of Junior's cheesecake, which now comes in various sizes and is quite expensive. Now, Junior's cheesecake got its reputation from a cheesecake tasting that was done by New York Magazine, I think in the 1970s, at the beginnings of New York Magazine. And it came out as the number one cheesecake in New York. And that was, by the way, after Lindy's was gone, and there was no more Reuben's either. And I'm sure there were plenty of other places that made great cheesecake. For instance, the cheesecake that's served in most, or at least used to be, in most steakhouses, where cheesecake was, I don't know how you eat cheesecake at the end of a steak dinner, but people did and do
it. But it was a feature.
It was a feature, right.
Cheesecake.
So that was made by a bakery in the Bronx. The name just escaped me. I had it in my head, and now it escaped. But it was made from a bakery in the Bronx. It was a famous cheesecake. But these New York-style cheesecakes, and you leave New York, and they call it New York-style cheesecake, even though we just say cheesecake. Now, Junior's cheesecake distinguishes itself by being made on top of a very thin layer of sponge cake. I have the recipe for the sponge cake, but I've made this cake a number of times, and I don't bother with the cheese because it's a nuisance to make, and I'm really not after the sponge anyway. I'm after the cheesecake.
Yeah.
So for the filling, it's 4 8-ounce packages of cream cheese. That's the regular, not light. Okay.
Yeah. Definitely not light.
You know those aluminum foil bricks of cream cheese. 4 of them. 1 2/3 cup of sugar, 1/4 cup of cornstarch, and this one has the flavoring that I like, which is vanilla. I don't bother with any lemon. A tablespoon of vanilla extract. Now, this batter needs to be put on. Oh, wait, I'm not finished yet. 2 extra large eggs. And 3/4 cup of heavy cream. So this gets baked in a 350-degree oven. You want to generously butter a 9-inch spring form. Now, I'm not making the sponge cake, but I do want to line the pan with something. So you can dust it with cookie crumbs, with graham cracker crumbs. One thing I love doing, and I have another cheesecake recipe that I actually call for this, is grind up some Amoretti cookies and use the Amoretti crumbs. So you butter your springform pan rather heavily, and then you put the crumbs in and turn the pan around so it all gets dusted. And that's it. Now, the filling, you just dump everything. Well, not everything. You dump... I like to start this slowly, by the way. So I just dump 1 package of cream cheese and a few tablespoons of sugar, maybe half a cup of sugar, and the cornstarch in a bowl and beat it until it's creamy. It's going to take a while, at least 2 or 3 minutes. And then you beat in the rest of the three packages of cream cheese. And now with the mixer on a little higher, that was all on medium-low, add 1 1/3 cups of sugar, or basically the rest of the sugar, and the vanilla, and then blend in the eggs one at a time. You know, beat it well after each egg, and then blend in the heavy cream, but only mix it until it's just nicely, you know, a nice smooth batter, and pour that in your springform pan. Again, line, you know, put a aluminum foil outside the springform just in case. You don't want water seeping in. You don't want batter seeping out. And then you're going to put it in a larger pan, put in your boiling water in the middle level of the oven, and it's going to take a good hour to bake this cake, maybe a little longer. Again, it's the same deal. You have to be sure that the middle is set, but still a little bit jiggly, because it'll firm up as it cools. And then cool this. You can take this out. As soon as it's cool enough to handle, take it out and finish cooling it on a rack, and then, of course, refrigerate. And I have to say that, again, I always think cheesecake takes better the second day.
Yeah. Quick question. The crust, I always remembered it as more, not amaretto-y, but graham crackery. Is that?
On Junior's?
No.
That's something Arthur Schwartz made up.
Arthur Schwartz?
Yeah, I made that up.
Oh, okay.
Making amaretti crumbs.
Okay.
Especially
and
now,
you know,
by
just,
the way. I see amaretti are available in every supermarket.
I don't know where it actually came from, but it could have been an old Horn and Hart back in the way day.
Oh, maybe.
But
look, you can use. By the way, I recently reported on this. I made these key lime pies using store-bought graham cracker crusts. And truthfully, I didn't like the graham cracker crust. I think it's such an easy thing to do. I'm probably not going to buy prepared graham cracker crust again, because I think it detracted from my delicious key lime filling. Anyway,
I
have to say that given all of what I just said, I do love a good Italian-style cheesecake, meaning ricotta-based cheesecake. And for that is the one that part of the recipe for me is the ground amaretti cookies. As I said, they're available in every supermarket these days. Years ago, you had to go out of your way to find them. So now, why not use them? In fact, I keep a jar of these tiny amaretti cookies on the shelf in the kitchen here, because I have a few visitors who look forward to them.
Yeah, very clever.
But this cake is, I don't think I have time.
No.
Yeah, I have a few minutes.
You got a minute and change.
Well, not enough to give you this recipe, but maybe this recipe is, I believe, still in, I don't know, it may have been cut from my Southern Italian book, Southern Italian Table. But the funny thing about this cheesecake, which has the amaretti, pan dusted with amaretti, is that it also is best the next day. But I remember making it once in Italy at Cecilia's farm, and her son, and the cake was cooling on a counter. I had just enough time to get it out of the oven, and I guess we were going to lunch and then coming back, and I would refrigerate it. But when we came back, it was gone, because her son ate the entire cake. And I said, excuse me, that was enough to serve 12 people. Well, and one ettore, obviously. He said, oh, and I said, and it's supposed to be chilled. He said, well, I thought it was a souffle, he said. It was so light.
and
he ate the whole thing.
The only difference is I've done that. It's not been a son, it's been a dog.
He was like a an overgrown laptop himself. Anyway, funny thing about Ettore, in those days, this is quite a while ago, he used to run every day, and he hated it. He hated the running. I said, well, why do you do it? He said, because if I run, I can eat. Now he's in his mid-50s. In his mid-50s now, and I'm not sure he's running anymore.
It's always a pleasure. I'm going to go drool and try and find. Now I'm going to have to go find cheesecake. One way or the other, that was very minchy, and we always thank you very much, Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, maverick, mensch, whatever, guy on Robin Hood Radio.